Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. To say that Dr. Thomas Murphy's research on DNA in the Book of Mormon raised eyebrows among LDS leadership is an understatement. It turns out that evangelicals came looking for anti-Mormon material as well. Find out what Tom thought of both groups' ideas on this topic. It was a real religious fight, so check out our conversation.
I basically did a literature review of that work that had been done to date, and it became quite controversial. A lot more than I had expected, because, you know, we already knew that there were historicity problems with the Book of Mormon through archaeology and linguistics and so on. So to me, from my perspective, the DNA was not that big of an issue, but I think it has a cachet. Maybe because of all the TV shows, you know, CSI or things like that, has this cachet with people that that the archaeology and the linguistics and the cultural stuff.
Now, let me just ask you something, because I know somebody else got in a little bit of trouble, and I can't remember whose book came out first, but that was Simon Southerton, Losing a Lost Tribe. Was your study in American Apocrypha before or after Simon's? Do you remember?
Before. So, you know, the kind of the story with Simon, as I was looking around at, you know, kind of doing this literature review, I came across an article that he had written. It wasn't a peer reviewed article. It was a kind of a loss of faith story that he'd published online. And so he had mentioned the role of DNA in his loss of faith. So that he published before my work. But an analysis of the data, mine was the first, the first peer-reviewed article. And Simon and I collaborated on a subsequent article. It wasn't a scientific journal article. It was a news article in Anthropology News that followed the American Apocrypha. And it kind of discussed some of the disciplinary issues that resulted as a product of that article. So my stake president called me in to talk about that article. And he said somebody had given him a copy, and he was concerned that a member of the church would make the conclusions that I made. And particularly, I had said that, you know, there's no DNA evidence to support the idea that the ancestors of American Indians came from Israel. The closest relatives for indigenous people in the Americas are the indigenous peoples of Asia, of North and East Asia in particular, and not a connection at all to the Middle East or the ancient Near East. And so I suggested that it would be best to approach the Book of Mormon from a 19th century perspective, to see it in the context of Joseph Smith's environment. And again, I didn't think that was that radical of a conclusion, certainly in anthropology as a discipline. But, you know, within the church, I think there was still an effort to try to see it historically. And there's a robust effort of scholars to try to find some sort of evidence, especially in Mesoamerica, of the Book of Mormon. And I'd worked in the heart of the area that they'd proposed for a limited geography of the Book of Mormon with the Zapotec people. And, you know, we looked at the traditional knowledge of the plants and animals. You know, there was no Hebrew or Egyptian influence on their language.
Now, where do the Zapotec people live?
Zapotec in Oaxaca.
That's in Mexico.
Yeah. The Isthmus of Tehuantepec, or Sorensen proposes his limited geography. And I'd also worked in the Mayan areas in Guatemala. And, you know, the Mormon stuff is way out of bounds from the way that Mayan and Zapotec people understand their history. So again, I didn't think it was that radical of a conclusion, and I figured the church would eventually get there. But I was a little bit ahead of it, of where my stake president wanted me to be. And he asked me if I'd reconsider my conclusion, and I said, well, only if the evidence changed. I said, if the evidence is different, yeah, I'll consider that. And, but you know, I got to be honest about what the evidence is. And he says, well, then I think we need to schedule a disciplinary council. And so I said, well, you know, if that's what you want to do, it's your decision, but I don't want that. That created I went home that night. That was like the night before Thanksgiving, Wednesday night, right before Thanksgiving back in 2002. And I wrote an email to a lot of friends and kind of a group email that I sent out kind of explaining what had happened. And I'd included in that the editors for American Apocrypha and some of the folks at Signature Books. And they passed my... Well, they asked my permission first and then asked if it would be okay if they shared my email with the Associated Press. And I remembered when Brenda got excommunicated, there had been like a couple of newspaper articles and it was, you know, I knew he'd had some issues. And so I was aware that could be a problem, but I did not expect what happened. I thought, you know, yeah, there'll be a couple of newspaper articles and it'll go over. But it just kind of blew up into a media frenzy. I talked to the Associated Press reporter the day after Thanksgiving and in the morning, and in the afternoon, Brent sent me an email and he said, the story's out. You need to get on the internet and check it out. So I got on, I think it was ABC News or something. And it was, already one of the top forwarded stories, of the day. And I was like, oh, wow. It kind of went crazy after that, you know, and the next couple of weeks I was, you know, television, newspaper reporters, followed me to class.
Oh, really? It was that bad? Wow.
Actually, the ones that came to class came a little bit later, actually. It was intense. Eventually my stake president, I suspect from pressure from higher ups, caved under the pressure and backed off and canceled the disciplinary council. And the reason I think he had some pressure to do that is because I asked him later, I said, did you feel pressured to discipline me? Did you feel like, you know, that you had to take discipline? A reaction against me? And he says, no, quite to the contrary. And then he kind of qualified what he's saying. He said, I was constantly told that it was a local decision. It was my decision, you know, and, you know, he said he was concerned about my welfare because I had expressed, to him and to the media, that I didn't want this to happen. So he said he was concerned for me, and that he thought that the disciplinary process should be a court of love, and that it should help a church member come back into good standing. And he didn't feel like that goal was being accomplished, and that it had kind of gotten waylaid by the media attention. And he also said he needed to protect the church, and that he felt that this was the best way to protect the church was to back off. And so indefinitely postponed it, and then he later canceled it altogether.
Hmm. Is this a success story that if you get in trouble, you contact the media or?
I don't know that I've kind of puzzled over that because, I mean, certainly there have been a lot of other people that have used the media, but not to that effect. You know, Kate Kelly or John DeLand, they used the media a lot. They didn't get the same results. Gina Colvin did, though. Gina Colvin got a similar result. I mean, she actually had the trial I don't know that I would recommend that.
Unless you want to be a celebrity for, a little while. Did you feel like a celebrity when all this was happening?
Oh, 15 minutes of fame. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I felt it most, you know, I'm in the Seattle area. Most people here don't care, right? Locally, it wasn't, I mean, it was covered in the newspapers, but it wasn't ever front page locally. Okay. But in Utah and Idaho, it was front page all over. It's front page LA Times. But you know, locally, it wasn't that big of a deal. So at home, other than, you know, around my campus, people were pretty aware of what was going on. But it was when I went back home to Utah and Idaho to like family reunions or weddings or funerals, that sort of thing. And then I'd have half my family thought I was a hero and half of them thought I was, you know, Satan incarnate, you know. And so that was really kind of interesting.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, I mean, I have my family's, you know, my dad was a convert to the church. And so most of his family are not LDS. And in fact, some of them were, I'd participated in a video. There was a filmmaker that went around and interviewed a bunch of Mormon biologists and anthropologists working on these issues of DNA. One of which was me and Trent Stevens and Jeff Meldrum were others. And Simon Southerton as well was interviewed in this video called DNA versus the Book of Mormon. And it was an evangelical ministry. And they didn't tell me when they first contacted me. I actually heard about them through David Glenn Smith, who's a geneticist at UC Davis. And I was contacting him about some data that that he had mentioned in a footnote of an article that he thought maybe one of the mitochondrial lineages known as the X lineage might have been found in Mesoamerica. Turns out that it was contamination in the end, if I remember right. But anyway, he says, well, and I mentioned that I was, you know, interested in this because of the Mormon claims. And he said, you know, I just was interviewed by some filmmakers about Mormonism, right? And the Book of Mormon claims. And he said, you know, so I said, oh, really? And I said, who are they? And so he sent me their contact. And I thought, well, again, I'll reach out, see who this is. I was curious who was doing this film. And so I sent him an email. And it was funny, later I read, where was it? I think it might have been in some newsletter, some evangelical newsletter about how they saw this as, you know, somehow God delivering me to them or something. And
oh, really?
Them an email.
You were an answer to their prayer.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of funny. You know, I sent them an email and they said, oh, we'd like love to interview you. And I said, well, I'll be in Salt Lake City for the Sunstone Symposium. And, you know, maybe that'd be a good time. So we met in a hotel room. And that was the first time I knew that they had anything to do with in evangelical ministry. They handed me a piece of paper that said, you know, a release, which is, you know, common to do. But I looked at it and it had this ministry. And I'm like, what is this? And they assured me that they, you know, they were trying to make a balanced perspective and so on. And so I said, okay, I'll sign this. And they interviewed me and cut out everything I said that might have challenged the historicity of the Bible, right? Especially the dating, the timing, right? All that was completely gone. And then what appears in the film are all the things that challenge Mormonism.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, but anyway, the reason I was telling this story is that my relatives on my mother's side were going around knocking on, on my father's side, they were going around Twin Falls and knocking on people's door and leaving this video. And then my relatives on my mom's side were the ones getting this video, right? It was being left on their doorstep. And so that like created a little bit of tension at family reunions.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Thomas Murphy. In our next conversation, we'll tackle the issue of whether Indian slavery happened before the arrival of Christopher Columbus. Is there any evidence for Indian slavery before the Spanish arrived?
So I don't really like to use the term slavery to describe that. It certainly wasn't chattel slavery. People were not bought and sold. Okay. It was more like what Mormons did in the Mormon Indian Student Placement Program.
For those of you who are interested in the entire interview uncut without any interruptions, sign up at patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview for just $5 a month. Also, we have other tiers. If you'd like to subscribe on our website at gospeltangents.com, click on the yellow subscribe button and you can subscribe for $10. You can also do that on Patreon and get a PDF transcript. We've also got some other ones for $15 and $20 if you'd like to get those as well. If you're interested in individual transcripts, go to Amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents interview, and you can see our past interviews there in paperback form. So just check out Gospel Tangents. We're always updating those. For the latest updates on Facebook, go to Facebook.com/Gospel Tangents and you can see our latest updates there. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. Of course, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And please give us a 5-star rating for those of you who listen to audio only. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.